This episode of the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast is brought to you by Spectacle Eyewear. Now, if you've been watching any episodes of this podcast on our YouTube channel, you might have noticed I've been wearing some pretty cool specs lately. Well, you know where I get them? Spectacle Eyewear, 505 Tremont Street, Boston, Massachusetts. Their phone number is 617-542-9600. Head down to Spectacle. Go visit our friend Paul. You'll get yourself some cool specs.
Down at Lakeside after
Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Fun show today. We have Andrea Gillis in the house. The track we played to get things going was called About a Girl. Love that song, with the guest vocals from one of our favorites, Tanya Donnelly. It came out as a single in 2022. It's available on Bandcamp, as is most of Andrea's deep catalog of tunes. Aside from being one of the best singers in the Boston music scene, Andrea has done a ton of behind-the-scenes work as well, including a major role at one of the coolest dive bars of the last 25 years, the Abbey Lounge, Inman Square, right on the Somerville-Cambridge line. Not just literally, either. Half the club was in Somerville, the other half was in Cambridge. Unfortunately, no longer. This was one of my hangs for a while, around 2003, 2004, like Andrea, very welcoming environment. So check this out. We'll be right back to talk about Andrea and much more. Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums in their two locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool. All right, and we're back. So I saw a great show since we last talked. Deep Valley played their farewell Boston show at the Crystal Ballroom in Davis Square, Somerville, and man, did they rock the joint. Hard to believe that they're calling it quits because they were on fire. They played the Sistronics album in its entirety, left the stage, came back and played a bunch more before saying goodbye to Boston. You may recall that Lindsay and Julie were on the show not too long ago. We had a great talk. If you missed it, please go back and check it out. It's worth your while. We've got the whole story and more. I planted myself on the side of the stage at the Crystal Ballroom, Julie's side, and I was on a rock and roll high for over an hour. Truly great performance. Sloppy Jane from New York City opened the show, and man, they were fantastic as well. Really great night, and I love the Crystal Ballroom, which is located in the same building as the Somerville Theater, might very well be my favorite place to see a band. It's right up there with the Middle East in Cambridge. I love the high stage and the pit in front of the stage. You can see the bands really well from anywhere in the room. The vibe is good there. Well, at least I think so. It takes a lot to get me out of the house these days anyways. But I wasn't going to miss that show. I know Lindsay and Julie have a bunch more dates here, and then they play Europe and the UK, actually all over the UK and Europe, where they had some of their greatest success. Deep Valley was one of my favorite bands of the 2000s for sure. Sad to see them go. Also, I want to mention that I went to a private listening party Saturday, and I listened to the entire upcoming Zip Tie Handcuffs record, which is recorded by Alec Rodriguez. It's truly incredible. The record is called Moss, and I think it's their best work so far. Vinyl coming through King Pizza, so keep your eyes and ears open for that. And hang on, and we'll be right back. I met Andrea Gillis at the Abbey Lounge. She was very cool to me. She let me do, set up acoustic shows every Tuesday night, and we had a great run. And also one of my best nights of promoting shows ever, when we brought Sylvain from the New York Dolls in for a solo show, and we sold out the place. And what a night that was. Andrea has been unbelievably successful at putting together great bands and making great records with some of the best musicians musicians and people in the Boston music scene. The list of credits on her records is always amazing. Plus, she's worked with great producers and engineers like Ed V, Jeremy Curtis, David Minahan, and of course, her husband, Mark Panansky, from Township and runner in the Thermodynamics, who was on the show not too long ago. They do a lot together. She's actually recorded some of his songs. They perform together. They're really good. Andrea is highly respected by her peers and a genuinely nice person. All right, are you ready? Here I am with Andrea Gillis.
Oh, good. We're in the same boat.
Welcome. We're off to a great start. Welcome to those of you watching on YouTube. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear this entire episode with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Please welcome to the show, Andrea Gillis.
Hello.
How are you, Andrea?
I'm good. It's nice to see your face.
Good to see you. I haven't been living in Boston the whole time, but I've only run into you a few times. I know we saw each other at Justine Kovalt tribute show. And yeah. I'm not trying to start on a sad note or anything.
Oh, that's okay.
That was a happy night.
It was a happy night. And she was a wonderful person. Definitely missed. Definitely. But, I think she's always going to be remembered. I think the only way to remember people is to be able to talk about them. And, you know, just because somebody passed away doesn't mean they're not a part of you anymore. So
absolutely. She's a hard person to stop talking about because she's so involved in everything.
She's the best. But you know, as a friend, I miss her a lot.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I know that you ended up having some music on her record label too. So, yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. But I wanted to ask you about Southie. Because you grew up there, right?
Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up there?
Well, I have to say, my family's from Roxbury. So we moved to Southie when I was in fourth grade. So I lived in Southie for a short time when I was a baby. Then we moved back to where my mom's family was in Roxbury. Then we moved to Southie when I was in fourth grade.
Wow, but you lived in Roxbury as a child. That must have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was, to me, it wasn't anything, you know, it was just my home and, you know, it was right in the middle of the city and I had friends of all backgrounds, you know, because at that time it was very,
It would be great growing up in a diverse area like that.
Oh yeah. Right? Yep. We had like, people from Puerto Rico across the street. People from Cape Verde around the corner. And I had friends of all colors and backgrounds at that stage. So it was, and all kinds of smells, I remember, like all the different kinds of food, just smelling all these.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Food. And then you walked into my house and it just smelled like Italy.
No, you're half Italian and half something else, right?
Yeah, Irish and Scottish, yep.
Irish and Italian's the greatest combo.
Mm-hmm. Like, so Gillis is a Scottish name. So they're from Nova Scotia, but came from Scotland. So we know all that kind of, like the background. We're all into it, so.
Where did you go to school? Did you go to school in that neighborhood?
I went to school in Dorchester. So I went to St. Margaret's. I went to Catholic school pretty much till high school, halfway through high school. So I went to St. Margaret's, which is no longer. And then we used to, I think by fourth grade, I think because it was a group of kids in our neighborhood in Roxbury that went to St. Margaret's because we were sort of on the border of Dorchester, like the beginning of Mass Ave, like the very top of Mass Ave. So sometimes we would walk home. There'd be like older kids would walk us younger kids home. And then you'd go home and wait till your parents came home.
People think of that as a very rough area, rough neighborhood.
Yeah, it wasn't. It never seemed rough because we all had what we needed. So it wasn't, you know, and we were always all together. So it was never nobody was ever alone. And when someplace is your home, you don't even realize that it's, you know, there could be trouble going on, like, you know, four blocks away, because I think everybody really looked out for each other. And I think in those small neighborhoods, people do.
Yeah, you got like Donna Summer, New Edition, New Kids on the Block. For people out there listening around the world or wherever you're listening, that was a big music neighborhood.
It was huge. And I remember my friend Maria Centeno and I, and my mom knows this now, but she didn't know this then. But do you remember Zares? Do you remember Zares?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Department store, right?
Yeah. So we walked from, because I was like obsessed with New Kids on the Block. The both of us were. So we were like, we got to find New Kids on the Block. So we went to Zares with Maria's mother, and we left her. And we just walked to Orchard Park Projects, and walked around the projects looking for New Edition.
Wow.
I was like, I didn't think anything of it. Nobody looked at us or anything. And then we walked home, but I got in some trouble that day.
Wow.
I was like seven or eight. Yeah.
Were you into music? Well, obviously, you said New Kids first, but then you said New Edition. Were you into like both of those bands?
No, I mostly with New Edition.
That makes sense. Yeah, because you're very soulful. You went in a very soulful direction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went to look for New Edition. That's what we were looking for.
Sorry. So were you listening to that type of music back then?
I loved all that stuff. Yep, I loved all the pop soul stuff. I loved Prince. So if I could have a poster on my wall, then would have been Prince. I loved the Gap Band. So I loved all that funk. And I also loved anything that had to do with Prince, Sheila E. or any of that sound that came out. And then I also loved Madonna a lot. At that stage, at the early Madonna, and I just like dancey pop stuff. But then my uncles, so my aunts listened to a lot of funk stuff, Gap Band, Zap and Roger, that kind of stuff. Then my uncles all listened to the Stones, Led Zeppelin, Who, that kind of stuff. So I liked that too. So I got a little bit of both sides of popular music. So
that's a good combo.
Yeah, nobody played music, and we had a piano in our house, and
really?
Nobody played the piano. Yeah.
What was the piano doing there?
Just there. I think my grandmother just wanted everybody, like wanted somebody to play the piano, you know, I think that's why she had one.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Did you go to high school in Dorchester?
Half. So I went, and this is at this stage, we were living in Southie. So I went 2 years at Monsignor Ryan Memorial High School for Girls, my freshman, sophomore year. So we would take the bus from Southie to sort of was near, right behind St. Margaret. So it used to be like St. Margaret's High School, but then it was turned to Monsignor Ryan. So I went there for 2 years. Then I was acting up, apparently, so they say, and I went to Southie High after that. My mom was like, that's it, you're acting, I'm not paying for school for you anymore.
Well, so, I know I'm asking you a lot of questions about that neighborhood, but I'm really interested about
that's okay.
This. Was Southie High a tough high school? I get the impression it must have been a really tough place.
I think it was. I think especially coming from like a private school, you know, a Catholic school, and then going into a public school where things were a lot more wild. You could be a lot looser, and people were tough. And I was not really like that. So, you know, I was almost sort of not guarded, but I always had like an awesome group of friends. And, you know, like I said before, we always kind of stuck together. So I remember when I had started Southie High my junior year and walked in, I was like, whoa, I was like scared, you know. And, you know, at the time, like, people were smoking cigarettes in the bathroom. Some people just smoking cigarettes walking down the hallway. Girls were fighting. Boys were fighting. Like, it was, there were security guards. It was, and this was, I'm not kidding you, Steve, two blocks from our house. Wow. So all of this stuff was going on, which it was kind of, you know, I grew up sort of in a nicer neighborhood of Southie. So it was wacky to, like, walk in and see all this stuff. And to be honest, I didn't want to be there, you know, like I said, I just, if this was the school I had to be in, I didn't want to be there. So I didn't like really bond too much in, you know, in that grade. I met some close friends because I went to the bathroom and a girl was like, started to sort of mess with me a little bit, you know? And of course I'm like, well, you know, try to put on this tough face. Meanwhile, the inside, I'm like, oh my God, this is the worst day of my life. And all of a sudden, like, the bathroom, one of the bathroom stall doors open, just flung open. And this tall, I swear, she's so beautiful. She's like a goddess. Probably that's how I looked at it. She like came over and she was like, grabbed the girl by the back of her shirt and pulled her away and said, you, get out of here.
Wow.
And she ended up being both of those girls ended up being best friends by the end of it all. And we all ended up being pals. But that was my first days of school in Southie High. I had never experienced anything like that in my whole life. Even growing up in both of those neighborhoods, nobody ever wanted to like beat me up. You know what I mean?
So you were still in like an urban setting. So were people more listening to like city type, you know, music?
In the
urban area was like, you're too young for disco, but
which I liked, you know, I loved like the Bee Gees and stuff like that. But believe it or not, strangely enough, in Southie, there was a love for disco. Like, you know, at a time, well, any sort of like, you know, somebody's a party that somebody had, there would always be some sort of like disco playing, you know, like
I believe that,
or things like that. That was, you know, that was kind of like the dance music. But then it would go from that to like Guy, or, you know, I don't know, maybe even some more New Edition, maybe Heavy D and the Boys, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So it was definitely more urban. And as far as like, you know, if MTV was such a big thing that we all watched MTV, obviously. I mean, I remember the first day of MTV. So that was like, I would watch MTV in the house and watch the door.
I think 79, right? 79, 80,
yeah,
something like
80,
that.
Yeah. And so I would watch the other kind of music, which I like quickly started to like and related to Cure, Depeche Mode, and all the British stuff, which I love now.
did you have any inkling at all that you were going to get involved in the music world at that time? Is that something you wanted to do? Or
I surely did. And my aunts, especially one aunt, she listened to a lot of music, like a real lot. And so, you know, when I was about, I'd say 13, I really was like, I'm going to be a singer. Like, that's what I want to do. So I learned this one song, and I'll never forget. I was like so nervous. And the woman's name was Shirley Murdoch, and she was the singer in Zap. And I don't know, something connected with this song. And now, since covered by many soul singers, and I wouldn't even attempt it now. But, and I learned the song, As We Lay, it was called. And I sang, two of my best friends, and we were walking around the Heights in South Boston. And I'm like, I want to sing you guys a song. And they're like, okay. So, and I was like, I'm really nervous though. And they're like, just sing it, just sing. So I sang it, and the two of them, I remember looking at their faces, and they were like, what? Like, what is happening? So throughout that time in my life, you know, like you do, you hang out in the corners. That's what we did. So we'd hang out on our corner and I would sing, and somebody would be like, Gilly, sing a song. I'd be like, okay. So I would just sing, but I never did anything with it. So,
you know, what's really funny is I talk to so many people that are in Boston bands or were, and most of them didn't even grow up in Boston. So it's really good. I did talk to the Dogmatics recently, and they're all from like the city too, but there's not a lot of people that, you know, we even know, that you even know, that really grew up in the city. They ended up there, but, you know, there's not a lot. Like, is there anyone that you went to school with or grew up with that's in the music scene in Boston that you...
Not exactly like who I would say like grew up in the city proper, but when I was like, you know, probably like early teens, like maybe freshman high school, we used to go to a place called Faces in Cambridge.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is now, you know, has passed down into the other Faces. But so we would take the Red Line out there and to Alewife, and I became friends with Dan Nicklin.
Oh, so really?
From All Jack. Yes. So I've known him since I've been like 14. So
oh.
Throughout the years, we sort of bumped into each other doing music. So, but as far as anybody else that I can think of, not really. He's really the only person that, you know, he lives, I think he grew up in Canton. I think
there's a lot of suburban people that we know over the years, but not proper, not Boston proper.
No, I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody.
That's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
You know, we met at the Abbey Lounge on the Somerville Cambridge line. You were an intricate part of that whole operation. Can you tell my listeners the history of that place, because I want to know how you ended up there, but I also want to know how it started. I kind of know, but I want to hear it from you.
Sure. Well, I think it started with the man named Jay Grimaldi, from Schnarkand. Him and his buddies, Eric Salt, and they had a band called Schnarkard, and they had lived, I think, moved across the street from the Abbey. And they were looking for, they went in this dive bar and they were like, oh my God, we want to play here. It's so awesome. They went and saw how cool it was. And I think they just talked to the owner, to Timmy, and the bartender, Stevie, and that was it. They played like one show, and I think Heavy Stud was one of the bands, and I'm probably missing somebody.
Well, was that room, was there nothing going on in that room?
No, they didn't have anything going on. Apparently, years before that, there was somebody who had played like piano. Maybe they had like piano music. I vaguely remember that. But to my knowledge, nothing else was going on there. So they just kind of walked in, and then it just sort of blossomed. And then they asked Leanne, who was booking the Kendall, and she came in and started to help them book, I think, like Friday nights. So that's kind of how it started, all through friends. Because I think Eric Salt had also worked at Fort Apache. Melissa Gibbs and Melissa and Meredith had worked at Fort Apache. And I think he got those girls in there. And then it just kind of grew from there.
Well, you know, for people that don't know the room, there's two rooms side by side. The bar was on one side, and then there's this room. I know for a fact that held 110 people, because I remember the Sylvain show. It was like, we can't sell more than 110 tickets. And we did. We sold that place out. It was incredible. You were probably there that night, Sylvain. Yeah, it was
sick. You're not going to believe it, but I had a gig that night. So I missed the two cool things that happened at the Abbey. I didn't get to see Sylvain, and I didn't get to see Paul Stanley.
I was there both those nights. Oh my God, I can't.
I think we were doing a residency at Toad or something like that, and I know, because I'm like, I like spend so much time there, and like the two, like
you
I
did.
Remember, yeah, and it was like I did miss a few fun things there.
Michelle didn't believe me when I told her that Kiss was coming. And I remember when the limo pulled up in front, you should have seen the look on everybody's face. It was just like, what the fuck is going on? You know? And then they put stilts on, you know, they come in with their high heels on and they're like, it was incredible. You know, the Abbey became one of the most popular rooms, maybe not, you know, popular in the way we, you know, like the Middle East or TTs or something like that. But all the bands that really wanted to be cool all wanted to play the Abbey. How do you think that happened?
I think first off, I think the amount of like freedom you could get as an artist there, where it's like, you know, you're walking into a room, the room's not taking a gazillion dollars off of the door to have you play there. Everybody's like genuinely happy that you're there. Run by musicians. I think that was a big thing. And I think by having it run by musicians, having a cool owner and a great bartender like Stevie, who had,
yeah, he was great.
He was definitely a champion for us all. So I think that was really, I think that those were like the main things, like, you know, musicians, artists knew they could come in, they could make some good money on the door.
Sounded great too.
Sounded incredible because we worked on the sound. We made sure that the sound was top notch, and that never stopped. The sound never stopped evolving there, which was great as far as making sure the sound system was always like really awesome and rocking. And you know, most bands that played there, even the loudest bands that I had done sound for there, if I asked them to turn down their amps, I said, look, I want to hear your vocals. That was like my thing. I'd be like, we want to hear your vocals.
Yeah.
Turn down your amps. I promise I will make you as loud and rocking. You know, it was almost like I had to like sell it. But most of them listened. You know, I mean, I was going up with guys like, oh, tattoos. And I'm like, go on, please, just turn it down.
This is probably a ridiculously hard question, but do you remember who the loudest band that ever played the Abbey was?
There might be like 10. I don't remember. That's really hard.
I used to go there a lot too, and then I moved away, and I was so sad because I came back and it was gone because I left. But this is a good segue right here, because you started singing and playing during the Abbey Lounge time, right? You didn't start before that, right?
Very, very shortly before. I mean, like maybe a year, like not long. So I totally cut my teeth there for sure. In a band sense, definitely.
How did you get started with in a band? Like, do you remember what was the first band you were? You were in Schnockert for a little while, weren't you? Background?
I got to like guest a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
first?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Actually, no, I think I had Red Chord before that. So
Red
think,
Chord.
Yeah.
Red
so Chord. I think that was because that was my first band. And I didn't start that till I was like 27, 26, 27. I was kind of late. I had like a chilling stage fright. Like, so I still get it, which is insane. Not as badly because I've been doing this for a while now, but I would be debilitated like the whole day if I knew I had to sing like in front of people that night. And so finally around that age, I had met, I worked a lot in Irish bars. I bartended in a lot of Irish bars. So mainly the Druid. And so, cause I lived out that way. And so I'd gone to the Field one night and I had met this woman, Andrea, who was in Red Chord, who turned out to be my songwriting partner, and she just taught me everything that I needed to know. Super talented. And I said, I want to start an all-girl rock band. I don't want to play with any guys. I want all women. And she's like, I'll be in it with you. I'm like, yeah. And then she goes, oh, but Eamon, the bartender, he plays guitar. And I'm like, is he nice? And she's like, oh yeah, he's really nice. So we're like, all right, Eamon, do you want to be the only boy in our band? So it just kind of, and then the owner of the field was there, and Andrew and I were like, well, maybe we could have our first gig, just you and I, and we'll just do piano and vocals. So it ended up blossoming from there. We had our first gig at the field, and then we played, like, you know, did Christmas songs, like piano and vocals and like a couple of jazz standards or something. And then it just evolved sort of from there.
The field, was that in Cambridge?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember that place.
Yeah. It was like right on Prospect, right at the beginning of Prospect and Mass Ave.
Oh.
It used to be like, it was a rough bar.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm looking at Central Square right now in my mind. Over, it's Central Square, basically, right?
Yeah.
Cambridge.
Yeah.
Okay. When you said an all...
Emily Grogan came to the band, to the gig, and she said, I want to be in your band. That's right. I remember. And I remember I sang backup for Emily Grogan, because that might have been one of the first bands I was in. And I sang backup for her, and she kicked me out of her band. She said, go get your own band.
Well, you have a great voice, Andrew. That doesn't surprise me.
Sorry to interrupt.
I'm going to get into some of your solo stuff, because you have an incredible catalog here. All right, it was around 2004. Boy, what a way to start. You got Ed V to produce your first record, right?
Yeah.
And some of it was Tony Goddess and Ducky Carlisle. Tons of people. How did you pull together that? You pulled together like an incredible amount of people. Not just that record, but I went through all your records and I'm like, everyone's played on Andrea's records. So tell me how it started that way. Did Ed help you do that? Or did you say, I want all these people?
Well, you know, Ed always helps. I mean, he's just the greatest, and a great, like, friend, and he's like my brother, and he's just wonderful. When we did the first album, I think I had said to him, I want to make an album like Motown. That's what I want to do. I want to make it with like all different songwriters. I want all different players on it. And I think the Abbey definitely played like a huge part in that, from meeting all these people all the time. You know what I mean? And just becoming friends with them, and from them wanting to maybe play at the Abbey and me booking them, and so it happened sort of organically in that way. And then and a lot of the people on that first record I had played with in band, you know, live, and in certain, you know, certain like shows and things like that, if I needed like somebody to play with me. So they were all like my friends, which was good in the first one.
Was that when Michelle and Charles and Melissa, were they all in that first record?
That was the second record.
The first record was more of just an all-star get-together.
Yeah, because it was my first solo record. And I mean, at this stage, I look at it and I'm like, let's face it, that was like probably, I only had a live album with Redcord. That was it. We maybe had four recorded songs from Ducky. That was it. I had no experience in the studio, really. I had none of it. I didn't know anything. So
was that a cue that you did the first record?
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
I did a lot of stuff at the old queue. Yeah. And it was super fun. I mean, and it was more of like the camaraderie, because I still like it that way. You know, I like it when everybody's having a good time. The songs come out good. I don't mind a live record, like a live in the studio recording. Like, I'm up for anything. So I think a lot of that too helps when you're up for anything. That's the sound. The sound is being up for anything. I mean, I have total respect for people who, because I like people who have a sound as well. You know what I mean? Like a particular thing that they do. I love that too. But I think part of the excitement a lot of times is that's the sound. My sound is fun, but it's rocking, and it all comes out great, because I think people really appreciate it when you let them do their art. And you're like, no, do what you want to do. I mean, of course, I have a part that I might want to hear here and there, but like, I don't know. I feel like everybody has something to offer and to let them shine. And I think that Ed Velasquez is great at that too.
Yeah, I love Ed. Ed V is the best. You mentioned your second record. That was Melissa Charles, Bruce, great drummer,
yeah,
and Michelle. Yeah, you had some really good musicians, and you always have. That band right there was solid. You're talking about some of the best players in town. And Freak was on that album, right?
Yeah.
Song 20, one of my favorites. Yeah, that was one of my favorites that you had. Great rocker. You played with that group for a long time, right? That group of people?
Yeah, we did. That was like a solid, I would say maybe. Well, I've played with Melissa and Michelle since sort of off and on since the Abbey days anyway, because we had the other girls.
Other girls, yeah. Yeah. I didn't mention the other girls, but.
Yeah, and we're best friends, and you know, still to this day. And so when we had Andrew Gill's band, that was like, once that kind of came together, and like nobody had too many other things going on, so it was all good timing for everybody else to be able to join a band, because I'm like, look, I want a band and I want to play, and they were totally up for it. So, and the other thing is I had like 5 songs that I had written on this guitar that Andrew Mazzoni had given me, and I really just needed some sort of a special thing, you know? And those guys helped me finish the songs, and we actually finished Freak in my kitchen with Charles and Melissa. We did that.
Jeremy Curtis.
Mm.
Recorded that. Now you picked some interesting people to work with. I was going to bring that up. Well, not just play with, but work with.
Yeah.
How did Jeremy come on your radar? Because you guys made, that was more of the, was that your most rock record, would you say?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely, right?
I think so. And he's more of like a rootsy guy.
Yeah, that's what I was confused about.
I don't, well, I guess I leave people guessing all the time. Well, I knew he played on One Another. So I met him through Sticky. And
Sticky was a great band.
Great band. I think I had sang on something for Sticky.
You've done stuff with Steve Mayone too, haven't you?
You know what? Not as much as I would like to, because he is fabulous. But yeah, enough for sure. Yeah. Definitely. But I would always like to do more with that guy. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's good.
Awesome, right? So I met Jeremy at the Abbey, where I met everybody and all good pals. And then I don't know how it came about. Maybe we were playing Tweed. I think that's what it was. We played Tweed, the Tweed River Festival.
Vermont. Yeah.
We played that a few years, actually. We were like one of the first bands to play that festival.
And he was like a promoter of that festival?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yep. And so I think I just asked him, like, you should produce a record for me.
Was it around that time that you, I know you opened for Jay Giles and you had a bunch of other big gig, Peter Wolf. Was it Peter Wolf or Jay Giles?
First one was like I think that was 2009. I was you know, I was doing my research before. I'm like, I have to start, instead of being like, I did some research this week. I boned up for our interview.
I did too.
Did you?
but I don't have, you know, I'm my notes are a little scattered here, so forgive me. But I'm trying to, when you have a resume like yours, it's really hard to like piece it all together because there's so many things I want to ask you right now. But I know you had some big shows, and I think one was at I wasn't living around, but I'd heard about these. I think you played the House of Blues.
Yeah, we were the first band.
Yeah.
We were the first band to ever play the House of Blues in Boston. So fun. How fun is that?
That's a good one.
That was awesome. And Peter called, and I'll never forget. I'm like, what? Peter Wolf's on the phone. Like, what is happening? And he was like, Andrea, you get those girls and come and play an open for us at the House of Blues. I'm like, okay. I'll be there. And I remember got like no details because I never really had a manager, which I probably could have used. And and so anyway, that was it. He was called to ask us to open Jay Giles, and it was probably one of the greatest nights of our lives.
It was sold out, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It was, and we watched the, I don't even think we left the backstage. We stayed, all of us, Michelle, Melissa, and Charles, and Bruce, and we all stood on the side of the stage just watching the whole show because we could. We didn't, you know, we just stayed. I didn't want to move. None of us wanted to move. We didn't want to miss anything. And it was incredible.
It's a good room.
Yeah. And Duke Levine, Duke was playing with them that night. And I think that sometimes Duke might have, you know, like he's really good friends with Pete. And I think, you know, Pete always knows what's happening around town, always. So I think between Duke and Asa was very good friends with Pete.
Asa Brebner.
Also.
Yeah. And,
so, you know, they were always sort of had their finger. They all kind of knew what was going on around town and, you know, who should be doing what. And, you know, if you like, you know, go and see this person or that person.
I wasn't there, but I think Peter Wolf showed up and jammed at the Abbey one night, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He did a couple. One time he came, Asa recorded the Abbey Load. He recorded that live album, which I just recently listened to. It's just like incredible live album. It's so good. And so he came for Ace's album. And then, you know, he would show up when, like, one time there was like this young hip hop band there. And he just like showed up and like jumped up on stage with them. But I think he was buddies with one of them. And I remember that was probably one of the first times I was like, oh my God, Peter Wolf is here. That's crazy. And now he's my pal. I love it.
He's a good pal to have. I got to talk to him one day. I was in, it was really funny. Little Steven, you know, I had my time where I worked with him on the Charms and stuff. And he was at the Charles Hotel, and I went over to get him to get something to eat. He's like, I want to just go to a little divey place. We went to Leo's, and we walked in, and the only person in there was Peter Wolf. And it was like, I was like on cloud nine. I'm like, how in the hell did I end up with these two guys? And
awesome.
Steven thought I set it up, which I did not, because Peter Wolf just hangs out in Cambridge, you know? So he's one of the greatest. You had a bunch of different things you did along the years, but I'm going to jump ahead here to Ladies Love Thunder, because that record is a real gem. Once again, you put together an incredible group of musicians performing their songs. Like, whose idea was that?
Well, a lot of it was mine as far as the songs go. You know, Ed's always great at like throwing one or two in here, like, oh, you know, like he threw me like he's like, you should do this Salt song, you know. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll do that one. And then you know, Ed really took a lot of the reins too as far as the players, like, you know, putting that together. We started recording that record when I was pregnant with Massimo. Oh. So I was really not in sort of, I wasn't feeling very creative. Like, I wasn't really like, oh, I need to write some songs. And I just so happened to have a very talented husband who had lots of songs that I used to, that I would like to see him play. And I'm like, can I cover that one? You know, so I just asked him. And I just asked Dennis, like, I was like, do you mind if I
Dennis Brennan?
Yeah. And and Edit has Tim, if he's like, oh, he's like, I think Gillis should cover this song, it would be a good one. And I asked J-Po if I could do his song, which is a lot different than his original version of that Ball and Chain. So that's, I just kind of asked everybody, hey, do you mind if I cover your song? And Ed was wicked instrumental in sort of putting everybody together and scheduling everybody. So we started recording it when I was pregnant. Then we had to put it on hold until I had the baby. And then it was also during that time of, I forget when, it was like that crowdsourcing company that went under and stole all the money from everybody. I can't remember the name of them right now. But anyway, they So people had pledged. It was pledge. You pledge.
Oh, I didn't know about that. That sucks.
So that whole company went under. Like artists, it didn't matter. Like huge famous artists were getting got screwed. The little guy got screwed. Everybody got screwed. So that was one of the reasons behind it. We're like, we'll make this really great album. We'll be able to pay everybody really well. Maybe even be able to put it on vinyl. It's going to be killer. No money. They took the company folded. So luckily we could do what we did and we finished it. And it came out really great.
It did.
And I also had this sense of during that time, like, which is something that women go through. I mean, and as artists too, I mean, it doesn't, artists go through this in general. Women, we go through this. We don't want to be forgotten just because we have this, have a different thing happening in our lives, which is almost this natural thing that happens. Like, oh my God, no, I still have to keep going. I can't stop. Like I played my last gig a month before at Tweed River Festival. I was like out to here and I like still playing rock and roll. And then I only took a month off and then I was playing at Toad. You know, I was like, oh, it's crazy stuff. But in my mind, I was like, I can't stop. If I stop just because I have a baby, then what's it? What are people going to think? You know,
that is a dilemma.
Yeah. And so that's why I just kept going. And Ed was so great. And Mark was so great. And all the Chris Anzalone, everybody was so great. And helping and doing that and helping me not lose myself. So it was
a couple things about that record. You did a cover of a Harry Nilsson song, Jumping to the Fire, one of the great, great Harry Nilsson songs. What made you pick that?
Well, I used to do with AGB with the girls and Bruce and Charles.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I've been playing this, that cover has been around for a long time. And Ed was like, we should record it. And I said, okay. He's like, but let's get it to as close and as wacky as you do it live. Because sometimes it like goes on for like, you know, 5, 6, maybe even 8 minutes. And everybody takes solos and I'm screaming and it gets wacky. And so we ended up recording it. And I remember that part. So the first time, so also goes back to the Abbey. It's very interesting. So Triple Thick were playing at the Abbey.
Love
and they
them.
Play, oh, it's one of the greatest bands.
Yeah.
And they were playing at the Abbey and they used to play Jump Into the Fire. And I was doing sound for them one night. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
and
they
I
did.
I remember doing sound and there they were, play Jump in the Fire. So when I started to cover Jump in the Fire, I asked Mitch, I'm like, do you mind if I cover Jump in the Fire? He's like, it's not my song.
You knew that was a Harry Nilsson song though, right?
I did, and yeah, I remember from Goodfellas.
The other interesting thing about this record, it sent me on a wild, I won't say it's a wild goose chase because I did get my answer. I listened to the record and Weed Me Out. I was just like, this song's great. And I thought it was a Township song and I went and looked everywhere for it. And then I found it on this solo thing that Mark did that was just on Bandcamp. So that was a gem to pull out.
It's still like one of my favorite songs to play live. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, and like seeing him, he plays it like for one of the first times I saw him, he played it solo on acoustic guitar, just him. That's it. Seeing this, and I'm like, this guy's incredible. He doesn't care. Like, I mean, he cares so much that he doesn't care. You know what I mean? He just pours his being out. And I said, well, we have a lot in common, him and I.
So you married him.
Yes, I married him. He's lucky.
Yeah, you guys have a really interesting story. You're both so talented and you ended up together. That's fantastic. Since then, you've done a lot. Well, 2020 screwed everybody up. You did that collaboration with the Township, all your stuff. Yeah. Leave the Light On, which was on Red Records. Great song. Plus, you had the video, which is really sweet with you and your son and Mark and the video on the beach. And then I wanted to ask you about this because I just heard it I missed it before. There's so much music, Andrea, that stuff. I didn't know that. Didn't know that you had a song with Tanya Donnelly on it.
Oh, yes.
About a girl recorded by Minahan.
Yeah.
That must have been quite an experience.
It was so fun. Yep. So we went in to do it was just sort of like after we were all still wearing masks.
Yeah.
And so we went in to record the Giles cover, Jay Giles cover, Don't Need You No More, and About a Girl. So About a Girl was going to be second single on Red on Red. And so anyway, I ended up writing it. We went in with the poor band. Like, I put them under so much pressure. They had never heard it before. I just like plopped it on them in Minahan studio. Minahan never heard it. Nobody ever heard it. So I don't want to say typical fashion, but close to Gillis fashion. I'm like, we're going to learn the song. This is a new song I wrote. But when I printed out all the chords and everybody's like, what?
Oh, Minahan loves when that happens.
Yeah. But luckily, they're good sports and they did a beautiful job. So when I was writing it, I had in mind, because I sort of, the cover of it is me sitting on the stairs of Southie High. It totally, totally autobiographical. Oh, I wrote it from my point of view about girls growing up and women. And all I could think of was like, you know, Tanya and I are buds. And she is like, I'm so lucky to have somebody like her as like a mentor and somebody who supports me. And for quite a while now. And also right after I had Massimo, she's a doula, and she was right there with me and just really helped me through so much, all of everything. So I couldn't, and of course I'm like super nervous. I'm like, oh my God, even though she's asked me to sing on her things, I'm like, I wonder if Tiny would sing on this. So I asked her, and she said yes. And only, I was trying to think of who was one of my heroes when I was a teenager. And she was, because I loved Belly. I loved Belly when I was in high school. So so I asked her, and she sang on it. And I always think that's one of the luckiest days of my life.
I love Tanya Donnelly. She's such a nice, nice human being above everything, you know, great human being. Yeah. Now, I just noticed, and something else that I found is that Pat, okay, first I want to ask you on the ID, I Don't Need You No More, and the About a Girl, was that Chris Anzalone and Ed V on the rhythm section on those two?
No, Eric Anderson was playing.
Oh, Eric.
He played with Inchnockered. He was Inchnockered. Yeah. And he played in Jenny D. He was the drummer in Jenny D. Yeah.
And with Ed V on bass?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he produced it too over at Minahan's, right? You and Ed V work together really well. Yeah. It's really good that you've had these long relationships for like 20 years. You know, those are the best kind to have in the music business, because you can count on people to be there for you, you know? And
yeah.
You and Ed, definitely. Pat DiCenzo, I always get his name wrong. Did I say it right? DiCenzo. I should know these Italian names.
Yes. I call him Pat DiCenzo, and I probably say it wrong. And he's like the best guy of all time.
He did a wacky remix of Jump in the Fire. I listened to that. That's interesting.
It's so good. He did it in 2020. He did it during the lockdown. So I was going to release it during the lockdown. But then I wasn't sure what was happening with Red on Red. And I'm like, everything was still like at that stage. Like, I don't know. Do I put this song out or do I wait? I just didn't want to confuse Justine. So I said, I'll hang on to it. And then
is there going to be a full, you know, you got four albums, four, right? Is there going to be a fifth full length album with some of these tracks?
I'm going to put an EP out this year.
Oh, nice.
So we'll do an EP. In May will come out, and it's going to have those songs on it. So all of the Red on Red singles. And I'm going to put the Pat sing the Jump into the Fire remix.
So all your stuff, Leave the Light On, About a Girl, I Don't Need You No More, and Jump in the Fire. That's a nice EP.
Yeah, and then a brand new one too. And
great.
New one coming, yeah.
Do you and Mark write together ever?
Not especially. It's funny because doing the Leave the Light On About a Girl, he definitely helped me in some of those guitar parts because there are certain chords that I can't play and I don't care to learn how to play. So I'm not a guitar player. I like to just mess around and I'm fine with that. I'm a singer, I'm an entertainer, that's what I do. And so we worked very well recording together, which is pretty interesting, you know? So during that time, we did write a little bit together with those songs where he would just kind of slide this in or slide that in. And, but not typically, we don't really have too much time to do that, you know? But I think as far as recording together, we have a super lot of fun because we like wacky things and we like to have fun with that stuff. So
yeah, his body of work is insane. I mean, I can't even believe how much stuff he has. It's unbelievable. Before I go, I have to ask you about some of your influences. I mean, I know what some of the answers are going to be, but I want to hear from you. And do you listen to a lot of music now, or do you go back to your older stuff? I mean, how's that all work for you?
I think I go in cycles. So I've always loved like 90s Britpop. I'm definitely a Britophile. I love all British, anything British. And so now I'm like listening to tons of Oasis, and I like the new Blur album, and I like Liam Gallagher's solo stuff and Noel's solo stuff. And I just started listening to like Stereophonics again and Elastica and things like that. So I'm kind
Elastica.
I'm on this like kick of this kind of stuff right now. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I'm kind of back into that because it just puts me in such a fun place, you know? And then I'm like, these songs are so good. Oasis is like the greatest band, especially Definitely Maybe. I love that album, you know what I mean? So, but then 2 weeks ago, I was listening to Willie Alexander's, like, you know, Persistence of Memory Orchestra, you know what I mean? So I definitely will go all over the place. You know,
that's really funny because I think anyone that knows your music would probably say, she's going to say Etta James, Aretha Franklin, Sharon Jones, and you come at me with Britpop. That was good. I like that.
Yeah, who I love. Etta James is my number one fave for sure. No, she was rocking. She was a rock and roll lady. Tina Turner, for sure.
Tina Turner is right up your alley.
She did
definitely.
Everything. Yeah, she did everything. She wanted to play rock and roll, so it was really fun and great and amazing. So, but I do love those ladies, but I do love the rock too. And the Rolling Stones, of course. I never stop listening to Rolling Stones.
It's so nice talking to you. You know, I was waiting to ask you. I've been wanting you on the show for a long time, but I need to save some of the good ones. You know what I mean? I saved you, Andrew. I saved you.
Thank you.
Because I knew that you have a great story and I admire everything you've done. And we were hanging out for a little while at the Abbey back in 2003, four, around that time, you know, and I always thought you were the coolest.
And you too. Same.
Thank you so much.
For sure. You're welcome. Right. Nice to see you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wake up! Wake up to the sound of the morning coming in. Hang on!
The Andrea Gillis Band all over again. Andrea Gillis rocks with the best of them. That was one of those feel-good interviews for me. What a pleasure having Andrea on the show. I was getting a ton of flashbacks from the Abbey Lounge days while we were talking. What a place that was. It's right up there with some of the great dive bars in the city, with perhaps perhaps one of the best hangs as well. The Rat, Bun Ratty's, O'Brien's, the Linwood. Love that dirty water, Boston. You're my home. Yeah, there's been some great, great clubs in town, and Abbey's right up there. The Abbey Lounge is right up there with them. All right, please drop me a line if you want to ask any questions or you have any requests, whatever. TwistedRico@gmail.com. And if you're a musician or a songwriter and you have music, please send it over. You might hear it here or maybe on the Mirror Stars podcast. We also have Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and YouTube, where you can actually watch the Zoom interview that Andrea Gillis and I just did. And there's also a TikTok page at Twisted Rico where you can watch clips from the show, etc. All right, that's going to do it for this time. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive.